Oh, good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Wrap from Crowcast. Joining me tonight, as usual, is Macca. How are you going, Macca? I'll just unmute you and ask you again. How are you going, Macca?
I'm the same as I was before. I'm very good, thanks.
And Nikki as well. How are you going, Nick?
A lot better than I was last week.
Yes, not the best last week. I could hear it in your voice, but you're sounding better tonight. Which
is
good.
Grumpy bastard last week.
Who was?
Yeah, me. He was.
Oh, yep. Yeah, bloody hell.
All she wanted was an argument.
Nearly copped a suspension. Nearly copped a suspension.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, consider it a yellow card, Nick. Look, without further ado, and given that it was such a boring game on the weekend, we're going to have to do our best to liven things up. So get on board. Welcome everyone on the chat. Vardy and J-Mac and PJ Crows, welcome guys. We will be as upbeat as we possibly can discussing this week's win. But first, let's go to our scores, shall we? I've got some lovely music for score for all our stuff this week.
Oh, here we go then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That one's for J-Mac because he loves his heavy metal and he loves that particular guy, Leo Mara, what's his name, on YouTube. If you get a chance, if you like your heavy metal music, get around that bloke. He's fantastic. He does a that's a fantastic right, cover of you like a bit of Rage Against the Machine, Macca, do you?
I don't mind it.
That's fantastic. All right, let's
Macca's get... he's a bit of a rager.
Bit of a rager. Well, we got some more of that coming up a bit later, Macca. But let's get into the scores. Friday night, we had bloody Carlton let me down again. Collingwood for their first win. Yeah, that's it. Moriccioli. Thanks, J-Mac. Collingwood 100 to Carlton 76 on Friday night. Carlton, very disappointing. Collingwood making Peter J happy. Anyone watch it?
Yes, I did, and I'd like to know why the AFL think that it's fair to put 16th and 17th on a Friday night when they tell Adelaide and Port Adelaide you've got to earn the right to go on Friday nights.
We all know the answer to that one, mate.
I know, but it just makes they're hypocrites.
Of course they are, but you say that as if it's a surprise.
No, it's not
that. It's not a surprise.
Continued hatred towards their eccentric attitude.
Yes, absolutely. On Saturday, we had the Lions just about doing it, but not quite. Port getting over the line in the end, 97-92 at Adelaide Oval in front of 9 or 10 people.
So sad.
Oh, I mean, I thought they were going to do it.
I thought it was history repeating when they lost that final. The ball's out of bounds in exactly the same spot. Exactly the same number of seconds. I thought, yes, there is a God. There is a God.
Yeah, I know.
But he deserted us at the last moment.
Never mind.
Well, that debate we had last week, Macca, about whether Port have improved a lot, I think this actually shows that maybe not. I mean, Brisbane have gotten better, and that injection of Hodge into their back line who can just actually control and coach those kids.
Yeah.
And Charlie has been very good for them, except he didn't do too much apart from the first quarter. No. I think if he managed to – a few more things had gone his way, if he'd worked that out, I think Brisbane actually would have won that game.
Look, it's a typical Charlie game, and Fagan's challenge is to get four quarters out of Charlie Cameron, because if he can get that on a consistent basis, he'll be dynamite for them. But, you know, I mean, what we saw on Saturday from Cameron is essentially what we saw throughout most of his time with us, unfortunately. Never mind.
Bit of football.
Then we had the D's getting up over the Kangaroos 123-86. I don't know whether anyone watched that game. I certainly didn't.
Well, they got over their hoodoo. They actually haven't beaten North Melbourne in some ridiculous
17 games. 17 games.
Yeah. No, in principle, I don't want to watch a North Melbourne game.
Nah,
they're not that attractive.
And unfortunately for Donkey McGee, Jared Waite went back into his normal self and 60-odd dream team points. So if anyone got on Jared Waite on the back of Donkey's advice, let that be a lesson to you. Flash in the pan. Fremantle and Gold Coast, it sounded like inspiring.
I did watch that one. No, it was good. Look, Fife was outstanding in that.
Yeah,
absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
It was really Nat Fife versus the Gold Coast, and he's right back to the very, very best that Nat Fife has shown us in the past, and he's going to have a tremendous season.
I told you, mate. He's my sneaky early Brownlow favourite. I reckon
he's I actually tipped Gold Coast for that game, so damn it. Do you reckon Sandilands is in a bit of trouble for the Hill and Lions?
Absolutely,
you would think so. On the basis of what's happened so far this season, you'd imagine he'll get a game at least. But 96-68 Fremantle. So what's that? 28 points. The surprising result for mine was the Sydney GWS game. I thought Sydney were only just going, but they counted for GWS 103-87 on the back of some buddy magic once again.
And the fact that the distance he's allowed to run as opposed to other people?
You're at the point you raise there, because that's been a bit of a bugbear of mine for a long time. There's no doubt he runs between up to 20 to 25 metres because of the length of his stride.
I think they get mesmerised.
They let him get away with it.
I think the umpires get mesmerised watching him, to be honest.
Yeah, which is poor umpires then.
Well, yeah, but what was your first clue on that one?
Say that part of it.
If that was your first indicator, then you haven't been watching, Nick. and today, Richmond, as predicted by someone hosting this cast, got up over Hawthorn, 102-89. Richmond back home and enjoying life at the G, and probably a fair indication of where those two teams sit, I think, at the moment. Hawthorn just a little bit off the pace as they recalibrate.
I didn't get to watch it because I was at my sister's baby shower, but my dad, who did, his comment was, if Hawthorn just had another tall forward, they would have beaten Richmond. Well, that was his impression watching the game.
Mitchell absolutely dominated in the midfield, and whereas Martin, on the opposite side of it, had probably his worst game for maybe 2 or 3 years. Really way down on touches. But, no, I think Phoenix summed it up. The Hawthorn not quite there.
Not quite. On their way.
They're not as bad as what we thought they might have had that drop-off. I think they've actually exceeded my expectations that I had of them.
Well, they've got a very good coach. He's not going to let them fall away to absolute rabble, but they're just not, no, they're not quite good enough.
I think, too, they've been fortunate that their recruits and their draft picks have turned out pretty well. You know, it could have gone either way with a few of them, but O'Meara seems to be holding up. Mitchell's obviously a ball-winning machine, and, you know, they've got young Burton as well down back, so they'll be around the place. Don't know whether they'll make the eight this year, but they'll be around the place. And
one
then
thing that's got me and a lot of other people working really staggered, though, is Mitchell was always regarded as the number four on baller at Sydney.
Yeah, he was younger than Macca.
But, you know, seriously, he used to only get little bursts when the other guys got tired, he'd come on, and he'd amass possessions every time he came on at a furious rate. And I just think the big mistake by Sydney letting him go.
Oh, well, JPK, Luke Parker.
Yeah. He did amass the possessions, but he wasn't as damaging with them initially. And I think he's still a little bit that way at Hawthorn. He's gotten better, but he's still not as damaging as he could be.
No, fair summary. That's fair.
Yeah, and I think that's always been the knock on him, that he doesn't probably hurt the opposition as much as, say, a JPK or someone like that. But, you know, and teams seem to be content to let him accumulate. If you compare Mitchell to Matty Crouch, Matty Crouch has turned into a more damaging player, in my opinion, at this stage of their careers than Tom Mitchell.
Agree.
But if Tommy Mitchell starts using the ball a little bit more aggressively, you know, watch them batten down the hatches on him pretty quick. And then what the hell was this one? This is you can only put this,
God.
You can only put this down to Essendon not handling the Perth trip because the Western Bulldogs have been absolutely disgusting, and yet they got up 104-83 at Etihad.
Well, it's a fair comment, I think, on your part, because Essendon were pretty ordinary, and Western Bulldogs dominated that game really right from the word go. If they'd kicked straight early, it would have been out of Essendon's reach a lot earlier.
Yep.
Western Bulldogs, I mean, obviously, they tried their guts out, but that hasn't been good enough up to now, and Essendon, I thought, were pretty poor.
They just looked really flat.
Have they put something in the water in the opposition change rooms or something in the new Optus Stadium? Because it seems to be, I mean, we always knew there was always that bit of a letdown from after the Perth trip, but it seems to be even more so this year because you look at how flat Sydney were against Port and you've got today with Essendon against the Bulldogs.
Yeah, and I have read comments of other players that have come back from playing on that particular stadium, and they say it's very, very wearing on the feet and the legs, very similar to Etihad.
Mm,
yeah, because it's the hard surface. It's got a car park underneath it.
And it's interesting that you don't get that comment from Adelaide Oval, despite there also being a car park under there.
It's not as big, I don't think.
You mean the ground dimension?
No, the car park underneath actually isn't, I don't think, as big as particularly what you have under Etihad and I'm presuming what's under Optus.
I don't think it's full length, but it'd be enough. What's going on it? I don't think it's full length.
But also I also think it also depends on how deep the soil is above the concrete.
Mm. Well, and that's what I was going to say. Maybe they skimped a bit on how deep they did make that soil coverage over the top. But Geelong, you know, as a bit of a segue, just couldn't get up over West Coast after a shocking first half from Geelong. They made a real run.
As soon as he did his hamstring, they just then got the run back. He was controlling that pressure coming out or West Coast trying to get the ball out. He was controlling it. And as soon as he wasn't there, gone.
But we were debating this before, Nikki and I, and yes, that was one of the factors, but another big factor was the fact that they had three injured players on the bench once Ablett went there as well. So their rotations were down to one. Yeah. So they visibly tired. They visibly tired, whereas West Coast looked like they'd been given renewed energy. And I think it's just that they didn't tire at the same rate as Geelong did.
Yeah, well, it's almost getting to the point now where you want to win when you're going over there because you're almost half guaranteed a loss on the way back. Geelong got St Kilda next week, which you wouldn't think would be a problem at their home ground. But it'll be interesting to see whether they, injuries notwithstanding, it'll be interesting to see how they come out. Because as Nikki rightly pointed out, Sydney looked horrible against Port after that West Coast trip. So who knows?
Geelong have all the injuries, but also I think what's going to help in their favour, though, is how warm it has been this weekend. And it was warm in Melbourne as well.
Mm.
And you could see how humid and hot the players were getting and getting tired. So I think next week's going to be interesting as well, just to see, because players don't, it's kind of about the third to fourth round of the season is when they get that match fitness back up again.
Mm.
But I think it's going to be a little bit longer. I think we're going to get some awful-looking games of football next week.
Yeah, I don't disagree, and we'll have a look at that before we wind up tonight. But in the meantime, let's have a look at the Crows-Saints game.
Get ugly. Damn, that's ugly.
And it nice was. Choice. It was.
I wonder where you were heading.
It was ugly. Let's be honest. It was particularly the first half was horrific. They got this stadium over in Victoria. I don't know whether you heard about it, but it's got a roof on it. But the funny thing is, they don't close the bloody roof. And as a consequence, the conditions were dewy and heavy, and the ball was doing weird things. And I don't know, it was just a crap game of football, I thought.
Yeah. I did like one of the goal reviews, though, because it kept making a seagull fly backwards over and over again.
Yeah,
the first half was very ordinary. I thought we did look ourselves a little bit flat in the first half. I didn't think we had as much run as normal in the first half.
No.
And I thought in the second half, we got our act together, and they played at the same rate as they always play at. And look, I honestly think this team at St Kilda will be very lucky if they win four games for the year.
You know, everyone's going on about their ball use, and yes, their ball use, particularly up forward, is an issue. Just before we get into that discussion, obviously Adelaide winning 15-14-104 to St Kilda 7-13-55. But I reckon it's their fitness. I really do. Because they were actually spreading really well in the first half, which was contributing to the shit nature of the game. But the reason for that was that they weren't allowing us any run whatsoever. And had they used the ball a bit better up forward, then they probably would have been one or two up at half time, and they probably deserved to be. But they just fell in a hole after half time. And to me, this list has been together for a few years now. And to me, that's an indictment on the St Kilda coaching staff.
They almost looked like witches' hats in the second half. Mm. You're quite right. There would have to be a query about that. Obviously, we had doubts about ours early, but I think we can throw those doubts away in the sense that the fitness level of Adelaide Crows is far superior to that of St Kilda, because the more that game, the longer it was kept on going, the worse they were going to go.
The problem was for St Kilda was they flogged them during the week on the training track. So so they've tired the players out by doing excess fitness, etc.
Did they, though?
By all reports, that's what happened.
I heard they got roasted, but I didn't know they got flogged on the track as well.
Yeah, I'd heard that it was they actually sort of did a bit more some of the harder training. And at the end of the first quarter, and I thought, even though this game is ugly, I actually felt comfortable we've got this, because the Saints players, as soon as the siren ended, they went over on their haunches at the end of the first quarter.
Mm. Saw that.
They're not going to be able to cope. And that also then contributed to those missed kicking. You're tired legs.
I thought that was a bit early to be doing that. You're quite right.
Yeah.
That was very early to be doing that.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was almost the whole team.
Yeah, well, yeah, and they played a very difficult game style. They basically tried to play almost of a three-quarter ground zone press, basically. They were basically man-on-man, trying to cover two-thirds of the ground. And, it worked for a quarter, and it made us look a bit ordinary in transition. And even, through the second quarter, they maintained it to a large extent. But if he wants them to play that style of game, if that's his measure of St Kilda playing St Kilda's way, then they need 20% more fitness, because there's no way in a pink fit they can do that for four quarters, based on what I saw. Anyway.
Nicky and I also raised a point last week about St Kilda in the sense that the lack of leadership, obvious leadership. Now that Riewoldt's gone, and who's the other chap that retired, the senior chap that retired?
Montagna.
And Joey Montagna. Well, would have had a big influence on the players. And while Jack Stephen is an inspiration in the sense of his efforts, you can see there's no overall communication from him to the players.
Well, he's not even their captain.
Who is it?
Geary is.
Jaron Geary is, and he's a back pocket.
Well, that's a brilliant move.
And you're spot on, and you contrast it with the way Tex is. You can just see our players lift. And even when he's yelling at them, there is still that respect there.
Well, and not only
and
that,
and
Nick,
they listen.
I think we've got some leaders across all lines as well. It's been well documented that Tails seems to general the back line, and we got Rory in the middle and Richie Douglas as well when he's playing. And we do have a good core group of senior players, obviously led by David McKay.
Hey, he had a very nice game.
Well, yeah. He's our second most experienced player on games played at the moment. Anyway, but yeah, St Kilda, you're right. And then you see things like bloody Jake Carlisle and the way he carried himself.
Oh, geez, he's a disgrace. He's an absolute disgrace, that bloke.
And I tell you, if I was... Does he need to sniff some more? Wow. I might have to mute you on that one. But if I was Richardson, irrespective of where the game was sitting, I would have dragged him. You can't be doing that.
Yes, so would I. So would I.
It's not right for team performance. I felt like a couple of the young inclusions did well. I thought Caulfield looked all right.
He'll be a player.
Yeah, I didn't mind that young ruckman. That was only his second game against Source. He only got the 18 hit-outs, but I thought he really competed well, and he caused Source some problems around the ground as well in aerial contests.
He got done, but he competed.
Took 6 marks for the night. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more.
No, I know we're going to have a debate on that one, because I saw comments on it.
But. Yeah, but aside from that, I mean, Seb Ross accumulated 32, Luke Dunton accumulated 30, Jack Stevens, 28.
We did manage, though, to push them out wide quite well.
Very good point, Nikki.
So even though they were getting quite a few entries, they were not in advantageous positions.
Both teams denied the opposition the corridor to a large degree, and I don't think I've seen us play through the corridor much at all this season. Teams are really making sure that they're pushing us to the flanks and wings. Anyway.
I think that's credit to the coaches. I think that needs to be mentioned, because we aren't playing as much through the centre as we did, and because teams had worked out if they dominate the centre, then it was difficult for us to score.
Well,
I think the coach has come up with an alternative way of playing, and I think hats off to him.
Yep, we played pretty much the same way, particularly after half time. I felt we looked a bit more composed with ball in hand after half time, and we played that chip and spread style game that worked so well for us against Richmond last week. And let's just run through some head to heads and see how that pans out. 397 disposals to 377, so it wasn't a huge disparity. But again, our kick to handball ratio was 236-161, which compared to last season's ratios, I don't know whether you guys recall, but we were more, 1.1 or 1.2, and lately we've been up around the 1.5. So it's definitely reflected in those disposal numbers.
Yeah.
111 to 101 marks. The pleasing thing was we outworked them in tackles. Last week, Richmond actually out-tackled us despite us winning. But we had 80 tackles to 51. I think that the Saints only had 20 tackles in the first half.
Yeah, our tackles were, I think, almost double in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, I seem to recall them having a pretty low tackle count in the first half. Source won the hit-outs comfortably, 42-22, but we'll talk about that more in a minute. What else have we got here? Our disposals per goal, 26.47. Our disposals per scoring shot, again, a little bit up. I mean, good still, 13.6 per scoring shot to St Kilda's 18.8, so we made them really work for their shots at goal. But again, at our best last year, we were down around the 11 mark. So, again, reflecting, we're just hanging on to the ball and choosing our options a little bit more precisely rather than just run and gunning through there.
Just are you going to talk up our disposal efficiency? Because PJ Crowe's pointed that out in the chat.
Haven't got there yet. Jesus, Nikki. Do you want to do this?
No. I was just checking.
I'll get there. Bloody hell. Pretty even inside 50s, 51 to 54. And for a while there, St Kilda were up on inside 50s quite comfortably. But they had, seven and three quarter inside 50s per goal to our 3.4. And it was a comment made during the evening by the commentary team, who were bloody shit. That it was our efficiency with ball in hand was one of the key differences. Contested posses were even. Sorry, Macca, I'll let you have a chat in a second. Uncontested positions were even. Our disposal efficiency was nearly 80%. So, you know, and it showed. I mean, we were quite clean with ball. I don't think we were great going into our forward 50 either, but transitioning the ball with that chip and spread tactic, we're hitting targets more often than not. It was usually when we had to bail out that the ball got turned over. 12 to 11 contested marks, 14 to 12 inside 50s. We had 12, even centre clearances. I felt like they were more effective out of centre clearances, actually. Stoppage clearances.
They had a period where they were.
Yeah. Stoppage clearances 22 to 19. And that's probably the tail. Oh, tackles inside 50 is an interesting stat. We had 14 inside 50 tackles to their 5. So the captain playing at the back pocket wasn't firing up his squad to make some put on some defensive pressure.
Well, it's a bit hard to do that when you're the one getting tackled.
Well, that's right.
But they kind of don't count it when you tackle them back.
But yeah. I thought in the first half the ball lived in their forward line a lot more than ours.
Second quarter in particular.
Yeah. And we seem to be a strange side that doesn't seem to be too fazed by that.
I felt like we were quite happy to play the game on our half-back line in the first half. It seemed like we were just sitting back and just absorbing, you know. It's like a tennis match where you just take the guy's best shot in the first set and then kick away. I don't know.
And if they make an error, then we'll try and take advantage of it. But, that's the way I saw it.
I think we knew that they were going to throw everything they had at us for the first bit, and we just kind of had to absorb it
and just wear them
down.
You're right, Nick.
And Tex did get pissed off in the second half when I know he yelled at Seed at one point. He's like, and you could read his lips, like, fucking bring it in quicker. Because we were starting to get that ball use a lot more front of centre, a lot cleaner. And yet we still kind of paused a little bit, which upset him. And they listened. They started doing it after he yelled at them.
Just on a totally different note, and when we talked about fitness before, I don't know about what you guys think, but Paddy McCartan, number one draft pick, and if he's not about 10 or 20 kilos overweight, I'll go here for hiding.
Diabetic.
Yeah, which makes it really hard, Macca.
He's diabetic. I didn't know that.
He's had the concussions.
Yep.
And because when you have concussions, you can't do anything. So that impacts quite a lot as well on what he can and can't do.
Do you notice the patch on his arm, Macca?
No.
Yeah.
The patch on his arm. He's a type 1 diabetic.
So what you're saying is he's never capable of getting fit.
Bassett did. Bassett, most people actually don't realise that Bassett also was one, and he was getting injections and he had to time it specifically on when he had to have his injections. But that's why whenever he got injured, he always went down like he'd been, you know, shot. And you see very similar, I think, with McCartan. And I do wonder if later on, once we actually go through more information regarding concussions, et cetera, that whether his diabetes, whether there may be a correlation between how much that actually affects him.
Can you recall, Nikki, I don't recall whether he was diagnosed when he was drafted.
I don't think he was.
No, I could be wrong, but my recollection is I don't think he was actually diagnosed, which makes it difficult for St Kilda and difficult for the lad too.
Bassett wasn't. No. Bassett was only picked up when he injured his ribs.
Yeah.
Melbourne, and they did some tests, and that's when they discovered he was a diabetic, which was explaining a lot of the issues he was having.
Yeah. I mean, I feel a bit for McCartan because there's massive expectations on him. They took him ahead of the lad that went to Melbourne. What's his name?
Petrarca.
Yeah,
in fairness, he'll never be able to deliver in the shape that he's in.
Well, no, and I think that's probably the point. He's, I mean, Bass had the advantage that he was a fairly lean sort of a fella anyway, but you get the impression that McCartan is a fairly thick-set sort of a lad naturally. which means he was always going to have to work on his weight and his fitness, and with his medical condition on top of that, that's going to make it difficult for him. I don't see him panning out in the long term. And no. it's going to be an awkward situation for St Kilda to try and navigate.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, so you know, really, before we go into the individual stats, my read on the game was simply that, as we were discussing, we absorbed a fair bit in the first half. We were trying to play a certain style. It didn't look as if Pikey at any stage was hitting the panic button. And then we decided to, in Pike's own words, at his press conference, we decided to get more predictable with our ball movement after half time and just take the percentage options. And we were able to chip our way through St Kilda. They were fatiguing. And it was really only a 10 or 15 minute patch in the third quarter that got us our lead. And then that was that.
But we were cruising. For the month we got the lead, we were just cruising.
I thought we
probably could have won by more if we'd really poured it on. But I think it just looked like we were satisfied to win.
No, I actually quite like how subdued the song was after the game. Because the boys knew we did what we had to do.
Yeah, win's a win.
Yeah. And to me, that's actually our side maturing. We're not excited just to get a win.
We have some
higher standards.
We've shown that for a couple of seasons. I think when you're playing, you guys know this. When you're playing, you're playing a team that you're expected to win, and it's a hard work sort of night, ugly sort of footy. And like even Texas post match interview, you know, he readily accepted that it was pretty ugly in the first half. And I think sometimes blokes are just, they're difficult games to navigate because. You know you've got the talent edge on them. You know you've got the fitness edge on them, but sometimes it's hard not to be dragged down.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, when you're playing the shit teams, it is really hard to get too excited.
Yeah. So anyway, look, let's go through some individuals because there were some contributing factors to the overall ugliness, and it was interesting. And we'll go through our awards in a little while, but it was interesting that it was quite. Even across the Adelaide team, both in terms of playing well and also making mistakes. So it was quite... And when Rory Laird gets under 35 touches, you know that it's been a pretty shit game. He only had 32 this week. Brodie Smith on Twitter...
That was with somebody tagging him.
Yeah, well, Brodie Smith on Twitter was saying he ought to be dropped.
Macca, Richmond were tagging Laird last week.
Well, who was the tag? He was invisible.
Let's just say I think quite possibly his own words were something along the lines of, well, they're a bit shit at it.
Yeah.
He did make that comment, didn't he?
Yeah. But look, I mean, he had 32, 16 and 16, 7 marks, 6 tackles.
He's made a goal, that bloke. He's terrific.
6 rebounds. He's just, with ball in hand, he is very calm. Pardon me, 22 uncontested, but went at 81%, 6 score involvements, 9 intercept possessions. Did turn it over a little bit despite... And, you know, pardon me, I noticed something. In the first quarter, and I'm sure it was Leddy, they called out that he'd had a few touches and he was going at 100%, and yet I'd seen him miss 3 targets. So this disposal efficiency... percentage, I'd really like to know how they actually work this out, because
you've actually raised this issue before.
Yeah, because Leddy's had 7 turnovers and he's run at 81.2% disposal efficiency, and I guarantee you that his first 4 touches didn't hit a target.
But don't they actually consider something ridiculous, like an effective disposal is if it actually gets to one of your other players? They don't have to take the mark. It might then be turned over, but it's effective because you've got it to a teammate.
Yeah, but he had one where he kicked it and it went out of bounds.
Yeah, it's just weird.
It's very odd how they do it.
Yeah, I have major issues with the way they're doing the stats.
Yeah. Well, Vani Magic, if you know someone that works for Champion Data, I would love to know how they work out disposal efficiency. And if you can get him on here, I'll send you a carton of beer, mate. Anyway, so Letty had a good night. Reliable, gained nearly 400 metres, and did his job for me in Dream Team. Bryce Gibbs, again, very, very steady and consistent. The 26 touches, 14 and 12. I like that he uses it by foot. He only tends to use handball constructively, and he's one of these old-school players that likes to kick the ball, which I really like.
And 10 tackles as well.
Yeah, 5 marks, 10 tackles, kicked a goal. 8 clearances, of which 3 were centre and 5 were around stoppage. He had 7 score involvements, went at 77% disposal efficiency, 11 contested. I had him as our best, mainly because I felt like his was the most consistent four-quarter effort.
I agree with you. He's my best as well.
I think it was definitely his best game for us.
Well, I thought he was definitely our best player.
Yeah. He's really come along, and I'd like to mention that he probably would have been worth 2 first-round picks a year earlier.
In hindsight, yeah.
I don't need hindsight because I called it all that season, Macca.
Yes, you did. You did.
Seed had a really, really good game, I thought.
I loved his game. Near faultless.
What we want from Paul Seisman. 15-11, so a great kick-to-handball ratio again. 8 marks. Kicked 2 goals, couple of tackles, but 8 inside 50s is the number. He was really one of the main drivers into our forward 50. He went at 80% disposal efficiency.
I think he gained about 700 metres or something.
Yeah, 710 metres. He had 6 score involvements. I just felt that if he brings that every week, he's in our best 22, in my opinion.
Yep, that's definitely his best game for the club, though, definitely.
Comment from Genghis Khan, comment from Donkey Magoo in the chat. Genghis Khan, the seed was everywhere.
You're a funny man, Magoo.
He is indeed.
Trust you to pick that up too. Pretty true. Come on. Bit of decorum. This is a Sunday night family show.
It's a fact. The DNA traces.
Yes, I understand.
Science.
Yeah, I get it. Richie Douglas, interested in you guys' thoughts on Richie. I felt like he had a serviceable game, 11-11 for 22, 4 marks, 5 tackles, 4 clearances.
He's had a couple of ordinary games, and certainly at least one ordinary game, and I just thought he played a very, very useful contributing game.
Yeah, for me, I would have said it was a good one because I think he was doing a lot of that drive forward as well. Especially when we were struggling a bit in the first half, he had quite a bit of that trying to get that ball forward and did have some nice disposals into the forward 50. Didn't quite get as much, etc. But I actually would have rated that game as good. All right. From Douglas.
Yeah. Well, I'll counter that by saying that we down 2 crouches. And Ellis Yeoman and Huey Greenwood were quiet, particularly in the first half. Richard Douglas, Richard Douglas, in my opinion, just doesn't do enough. I class him as a similar kind of player to Jared Lyons, and Jared Lyons has been getting up in the 30s and accumulating ball. And whilst the 2 crouch boys are down, Dougie has to get more than 11-11. I'm sorry, that's my opinion.
Yes, but I think, Jared Lyons, when he was behind 3 or 4 other midfielders...
But he's not behind... That's entirely my point, Macca. Dougie, at the moment, is not behind anyone. He's our most experienced player.
He's definitely behind Gibbs.
He's behind Gibbs and Sloane.
Yeah, but Sloane was injured for half the game. That's my point.
But not in the.
In that first half. That's when Dougie went well.
Yeah, that first half was when he was actually in at the coalface with Sloane and Gibbs.
That's right, when he had cover. but when he's got to be the main man.
No, be fair to him.
No, I'm being realistic. Richard Douglas is a first-round draft pick. He's played over 200 games. We are short in the midfield. One of the reasons that we took a while to shrug St Kilda off is because our midfield was dysfunctional, Macca, during that first half. And Richard Douglas is a key component of that midfield. You can't sit back and have a crack at Cameron Ellis-Yolman and Hugh Greenwood, who have had less than 20 games each, when Dougie's had over 200 and can only get 11 kicks in a game of footy.
Well, I thought Hugh Greenwood was almost non-existent.
No, we're not talking about Hugh Greenwood. No, we're talking about Richard Douglas.
But it becomes relevant. You can't. It's very difficult to do it all on your own. You know, it's a team. It's all about teamwork, and you can't do it on your own. I mean, Douglas is not of that. He's not a Dangerfield or something like that.
Hey, is he a Jared Lyons? Because we gave away Jared Lyons for pick 395.
37 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can
of beans.
But the interesting thing is Jared Lyons, of course, has grown because he's in nobody's shadow this year. He's been the number one man. And
he's not the one. He's not the number one midfielder at Gold Coast.
I beg your pardon, is at the moment. Who's above him?
Well, he might be in output, but he's not. He wouldn't be rated number one at the Gold Coast. No, not a chance.
I heard his coach talking about him, and he said he's rating him as his best midfielder at the moment.
Yeah, because of output. And this is what I'm saying. Are you saying that Jared Lyons is a better footballer than Richard Douglas?
I think at the moment he's making probably better use of his assets than Douglas is.
No, you're not making logical sense now, Macca. Because you're not. Because if Jared Lyons is the number one midfielder at the Gold Coast and we gave him away for a packet of chips, why didn't we give away Richard Douglas?
Well, Douglas is more versatile than Lyons in the sense that he can.
God,
yes, he is. He can play half back. He can play on the wing. He can play in the centre. He can play half forward. You have a little bit of a set against him, so we're never going to get a fair argument about him.
No, I don't think I've got a set. I'm analysing his performances. He's a 250 game midfielder, first round draft pick.
The guys in 5AA had him in their best half dozen. Mm-hmm. The guys in the newspapers had him in their best half dozen. Mm-hmm. I had him in my best half dozen. Mm-hmm. And all you want to do is criticise him.
No, I'm not saying that he wasn't in the best half dozen.
What are you saying then?
I'm saying that we need more than 22 possessions out of him when the only people we've got in the midfield are him, Cameron Ellis-Yolman, and Hughie Greenwood, and Bryce Gibbs.
I thought, to answer your question in that respect, I thought once we didn't have Sloane on the ground, I thought he did stand up a lot more.
Well, stats tell me otherwise.
Well, what are the stats?
Well, the stats tell me that he only had 22 possessions.
Yes, but it doesn't say what he had.
Well, let me have a look here. Keep talking for a minute, and I will tell you that at half time, what did Dougie have at half time, Macca?
I don't know. I'm only going by what I felt.
Dougie had 6 and 4. He had half and half. So he had 10 disposals before.
So he left and he went up by 2. I think you're a bit harsh.
It's not enough. Where do we flounder? In the midfield?
We did have a period where we were beaten in the midfield.
Yeah, I just went back and had a look. So we actually turned Jared Lyons into Signorello and Paholke.
Mm-hmm. We gave him away for 36.
No, we gave him away for 2 picks. We gave him away for 43 and 67, which then became 47 and 62, and we also gave them 71.
Is that how it worked out?
We sent him and 71 up to Gold Coast.
Mm.
They sent 2 picks back, which we turned into Signorello and Paholke.
Right.
So we turned one player into 2.
We might, not really. Signorello's our player.
No, we pissed one down the drain. That's the first one you mentioned there.
Paholke?
Paholke's right. Signorello's not.
Cinderella's one you mentioned first.
Cinderella.
He's actually the later draft pick. No, Paholke's actually quite good.
The first bloke, as long as his bum points the ground, he's never going to be an AFL player.
I agree with that. He was a Hamish special, I think, and it's probably the first Hamish special you probably turn around and say is on the nose a bit.
Well, he was speculative in the sense that he had a lot of pace, and that was they were hoping that could be developed into something extra, but
and an absolutely shocking kick. So they've had to completely change how he kicks the ball.
Yeah,
he's actually played some decent games in the SANFL. He surprised me, Macca. I first time I watched him, I thought, yeah, he's not going to make it. Mm. But last season, watching him, I was like, hang on, he's improved so incredibly on where he was. I'm with you though. I don't think he quite will.
Did you see him in the AFLX games? I mean, seriously, Nicky, you would have got more kicks than he did.
No, I wouldn't have. I'm shit.
Well, nobody's arguing about that. But I'm just saying he's worse.
Anyway, getting back to the point, and you're right, Macca, we're not going to agree. I don't think that I judge Dougie harshly. I look at what I compare him to what we gave away, and I just feel like we gave away someone who had far more upside for someone who, after a long period of time, has proven not only that he can move in and out of games, but also that when he has to be the main man, he's not a big disposal winner, and he's proven in final series that he goes to pieces. So if I was Justin Reid, I would have been hanging onto Lyons and getting rid of Douglas. That's just my opinion.
Let's move on.
Okay. D-Mac, I thought, had a good game. 21 touches, 12 and 9, 5 marks, 5 inside 50s.
When they were keeping Seed quiet in the first half, he was providing that run.
Yep.
And some good run.
One thing I will, it has to be said to McKay, I mean, he's had a very, very sort of checkered career in the sense that there was a period where he was really pretty soft and he wasn't getting a lot of the ball either. And the critics were out and they were stabbing him and perhaps excessively, but or whipping him, but he was everybody's whipping boy. But, you know, I reckon from the midpoint of last year onwards, somebody must have had to give him a heart transplant or just give him a rev up, a bit of shock electricity or something. But all of a sudden, the guy's he's very courageous the way he goes after the ball at the moment.
I think he was always kind of that way. I think what's actually helped him is particularly this season is that he's pretty much just playing the one role for us as we need, which is that half-back line. And we did when we did that interview with him, which was our first interview, wasn't it?
Yep.
And still to this day,
our most popular player interview.
Yeah. Because there was noted in, who was the guy who used to work for us, but then who wrote a book. And in that, he talked about how D-Mac. Yeah. And he needs just specific instructions. He's what you do this job and this is what you do. And particularly from the back lines, that's exactly what it is. And we've seen him blossom that.
Bales was the one that I helped him identify that too, that single-minded approach. I think you're right, Nicky. I think he is playing a very singular role and he's doing it well. And the bloke that needs to take a leaf out of his book is Rory Atkins, and we'll get to him in a minute. But
I know who it is.
Rory Atkins could do with taking a leaf out of D-Mac's book because D-Mac's got limited tools, but at the moment he's using those tools to full effect. You know, he gained over 350 metres. He went at 85.5 disposal efficiency. He had 8 score involvements. I mean, you know, from halfback, that's what you want. So good game from D-Mac. Who else did I think have a good... I thought Daniel Talia again had a good game. Was solid and reliable down back, although I didn't think they've... I mean, Josh Bruce threatened at times, but didn't really break off, and I think that was largely because I thought Tails had a decent game.
Well, there's two good games you haven't mentioned.
Yeah, come on.
And one,
Lukey Brown.
We're not going to agree. No, not Lukey Brown.
Oh, I thought Lukey Brown was very solid.
Yeah, he was.
17 kicks out of the back pocket.
But Sam Jacobs, I thought he was very influential.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, see, I told you, because I saw your comments earlier in the Crowcast chat. But, look, I do think you're very, very harsh on him. I thought he had a very influential game.
Mm, mm.
Well,
I haven't said anything yet. What do you reckon, Nick?
I actually liked the way that he changed the way he was going for rucking contests during the game, particularly with the way that the umpires were paying the free kicks.
Mm.
There was one that was paid against him, which I thought was a bit harsh, but he's like, okay, you're going to do it that way. So then he made sure that that happened to him at the next contest, and he then got the free. And Marshall didn't learn because he then did it again. There were some issues with a couple of his taps. There was like a few in a row, they were going down. But he then would change it. He did try, and midfield didn't quite work as hard as they could have, and it was being read a bit better by the St Kilda ones. But I'm not as down on his game as I know you guys were. I'm like Macca, I do think he actually exerted some influence on the game. Not as much as he could have, but he wasn't deplorable.
That sums it up for me.
Well, that's different to what you said, Macca.
Well,
you said it was sensational and was influential.
I've never used the word sensational.
Well, you said he was influential.
And he was influential. Christ, he had 37 hit-outs.
Yeah, and I reckon he...
20 disposals.
I'd like to know how many centre clearances St Kilda got off its 37 hit-outs.
He can't hit it and get it himself all the time as well.
He's got to hit... You know what Sauce does, Macca, in my opinion? Sauce hits it where it's most convenient, depending on where the bounce goes and depending on the opposition. Sauce will hit... Sauce does not... If you watch Sauce's game, you go back and watch that game, Macca, and you tell me where Sauce's hit zones are, because you will not be able to find them. And neither does the Adelaide midfield. And that's a consistent theme with Sam. He does not have...
Bryce Gibbs found him.
Yeah, yes. Bryce Gibbs was playing a defensive midfield role. If you see where Bryce was actually starting in the midfield...
Oh, you mean when he started right out by the boundary line and Sauce tapped it straight to him?
No.
Like that far tap away?
Yeah.
That's not the easy spot.
Nicky,
that's
never going to win.
That was bloody good work there because...
Do you know who he was rucking against at that contest, Nicky? Sorry? Blake Akers, 190 centimetre, 92 kilogram.
On the wing? No, he wasn't doing that on the wing.
Yes, he was.
It wasn't on the wing.
Rowan Marshall was off the ground.
Phoenix, he didn't choose who he's rucking against. No, he's out there playing his game.
You're looking at one. I'm talking about his centre work, right? When it's a 50-50 contest,
the game, and I don't think he was anywhere near as bad as you're saying he.
All right, well, you need to go back. You need. I'll go back and watch the game, and I'll tell you how many effective hit-outs he had for St Kilda, because I bet you the number will be higher than the effective hit-outs he had for Adelaide.
One thing I can guarantee: if you count him and I count him, you'll be twice as high.
No, I'll do it. I'll do it properly. But the lad was against a second gamer and a midfielder. All night.
And I thought, you have a look at the stats, he dominated him.
Oh, so Rowan Marshall got 9 kicks, 5 handballs, took 6 marks, had 18 hit-outs, or had 5 inside 50s, 3 clearances. Hang on a minute. 2 score involvements. Okay, Sam Jacobs had 13 and 7, so he had 6 more touches. Took 4 marks, so 2 less than his younger counterpart. Kicked a point. Had
20 possessions overall.
20 to Marshall's 14, right? Took 4 marks around the ground where he should have dominated Marshall. He should have run Marshall ragged.
And the hit-outs were what?
37 to 18.
That's only twice as much.
Yeah, and how many were... All right, so how does this equate, Macca? Right, here's some maths for you. Sam had twice as many hit-outs, and yet we broke even in clearances.
Yeah. Well,
go and have a look at Stephen Martin's numbers. No, 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 they're bullshit. Go and have a look at Stephen Martin's numbers and tell me how effective he was against a side that didn't field a ruckman. And then yeah, we can talk.
But they did field somebody in the ruck who we know often is the opposition's best player.
Nicky, he's not 190 centimetres, for goodness sake. Come on.
Well,
Charlie Dixon
is not 190 centimetres.
No, but he's still not Blake Anker short.
No, that's what I'm saying. Sam was up against a midfielder. Charlie Dixon's not a midfielder. At least he's got size.
Well, this way, the rest of the world thinks that Sam went all right, so let's just leave it at that.
Oh, I don't think that's necessarily true, but anyway, we'll carry
on. But what Sam had to be mindful of is up against those short guys, you can't do what you normally do against a ruckman, because he did, and he got him high, and they then got a free and a shot on goal from him. He could not actually instigate what normally happens in a ruck contest, that pushes up to the way to protect your ground, because you're playing a shorter player on it.
The amount of time Source Jacobs gave up front position around the ground stoppage made me want to punch the television. We're talking about a bloke who's near on supposedly an All-Australian ruckman, and the amount of times he let Blake Akers and that two-gamer get in front of him in a boundary contest was absolutely disgraceful. I'm sorry, you need to go and watch his game again. Let's move on.
Don't support your argument at all.
The stats are, he doesn't dominate at all, Macca.
Oh, God.
He doesn't dominate at all. And I'll go back and I'll actually do the numbers for Tuesday night, and we can continue the discussion then. Rory Atkins, because this is another one where stats
we'll agree on this one.
Well, Rory Atkins had the same numbers as Richie Douglas. So what are you whinging about Rory Atkins for?
How did he get them? Where did he get them, et cetera, et cetera?
And both what played, did his opponent do?
Both played midfield. What did Douglas's opponent do? We didn't talk about that.
Did St Kilda deliberately go through Atkins in order to get their scores? Yes. Because they know he does not put... Akers was on... They put Akers on Atkins.
Akers was in the ruck half the time.
He was not.
Against our powerhouse ruckman.
And then he drops... God. No, he was on the wing.
You can't rewrite history.
Yeah, stop rewriting history. They actually put Akers on Atkins, and when they were getting all that stuff in the first half, that was when Akers was on Atkins. They were deliberately playing through him because they know. St Kilda knows he's not going to be actually defensive when they're setting up for a ball up in the forward 50.
Akers only got 19 touches.
Yeah, but how many shots on goal did he have?
He did. He should have kicked a lot more goals.
Don't disagree. I didn't like Rory Atkins' game either. I'm just comparing him to Dougie, who had the same number, or less numbers, actually.
You take over Nicky's role tonight.
No, I'm calling it as I see it, because you know what we do as supporters, Macca? We blow smoke up players' asses, and then we get to a grand final. We get to a grand final, and we lose to a piece of shit team like Richmond. Okay.
Well,
so let's call a spade this year, shall we? Rory Atkins, 22 touches, 8 marks, kicked two goals. How many did Blake Akers kick? Oh, one goal, 3.
Rory Atkins kicked two goals,
two tackles.
He kicked his two goals in the last half when the pressure had started to drop.
86.4%.
How did he get the ball? Did he earn the ball?
86. He's an outside player. 86.4% disposal efficiency. Gained 430 meters. Only turned the ball over 5 times. Had 4 intercepts. seven.
You actually have to get near the ball sometimes to turn it over.
7 score involvements, which was third out of everyone.
You loved his game there, did you?
No, I'm reading the stats, Macca. Make of the stats what you will.
Who played better?
This is why stats lie.
Who played better?
Who made the best contribution?
I thought Douglas had more impact on the game.
Thank you. That means the stats don't mean much at all then, do they?
No.
Which is what I've been saying for years.
Well, we might as well wind up the show then.
No, we talk past the stats.
Now, here's another one that the commentators were talking this lad up, and yet I thought his game was disappointing. Jake Kelly. 7 kicks, 12 handballs for 19. Took 5 marks but missed about 28. Only laid 1 tackle, only 1 inside 50. He went at 100% disposal efficiency with his 7 contested and 12 uncontested possessions. What else? 7 score involvements. So, same as Atkins.
I thought, 6 intercepts. Without knowing the stats, I thought his second half was bending first.
I felt like he got involved more in the second half, but I felt like his ball handling and his aerial work were horrific standards. Yeah.
Yeah, by his standards, that what we've seen of him, he's been a lot surer. He was that little bit off.
He was still
quite effective as a defender, but we know he can be better. And I was watching it going, but this is actually shows how good that defensive back is. That one of them can still be a little bit shaky, but the way that they play together as a team can actually
come on, Nikki. Who you'd think can could help pull have that up a little bit?
Yeah, well, my neurosurgeon's a lot. Well, Hardigan, I thought he played all right.
Yeah. I thought all the rest did quite well.
Yeah.
Because he's that high, he was playing a bit higher as well with the way that St Kilda push up.
Yeah. I felt that Dude had a more surer, he inspired more confidence in terms of his play. Had 15 possessions, 5 marks, also went at 100%.
Intercepted mark in, I think, the third quarter.
Yeah. Took
what
7
I like about Dodo is he doesn't play like a guy playing only 2 or 3 games. He doesn't. He plays with a fair bit of confidence.
Yeah.
He plays like Talia did when Talia started.
Yeah, really good write-up I read somewhere in a niche publication interviewing his Geelong Falcons coach. And, you know, you don't realise that Tommy only joined the Falcons halfway through the season before his draft year. So he had played little footy, obviously, because he'd been trying to break into basketball. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, and they knew as soon as he started playing, they knew he was going to be a draftee. Now, that's not bad from a lad who probably played 5 games of footy.
Mm.
It doesn't surprise, and given how they talk about his character, and Nikki, you've been a massive rap for Tom's character and his composure. I guess it's not surprising that he's stepped in so seamlessly, and you know, the scuttlebutt around Lever at the moment, I think we may have come out of that whole situation in front.
Yeah, PJ Crows has pointed out that someone needs to tell Goodwin's only taken 3 rounds for Dodo to get up to speed, whereas he's actually come out and said, oh, you know, it'll probably take 8 Levers, you know, to get up to speed.
He did too. I saw that. And I was really
much experienced AFL player.
Well, they've cut their $1 million player or $900,000 a year player a fair bit of slack there, haven't they? Bloody hell, 7 games to get up to speed. Anyway, of the rest, because we need to push through this, of the rest, I thought it was nice to see Eddie get amongst it. Still looked a bit all at sea early, but worked his way into the game nicely, and it was nice on the back of his family news, and we have to obviously congratulate him and his family on the birth of their twins. But
yep, it was him good, and Anna. Anna did all the hard work.
Well, I mean, Eddie instigated the whole thing. like Genghis Khan. But no, it was a little bit of the Eddie we know. He's got a bit of a way to go.
And it was also McGovern. McGovern actually was timing his marks a lot better, because you know how we talked last week that he was he was better than the week before, but he was still that little bit off.
Yeah.
And he clicked.
Wouldn't say he clicked. He's still missing him when he has to jump for them. But on the lead, he looked better. When he's in a contested or an aerial, like a overhead situation where he's got a jump in a pack or whatever, he's still jumping too early or something or other. I don't know what he's doing. Interesting stats, Mitch. 15 kicks, no handballs.
He was playing out of the back lines in the last half. We were using him down there.
You'd expect him to have a handball or two running off the back lines.
But he was doing, I think, a bit of the intercept, and then it was the long kick out. Get it out of the danger area.
I actually thought it was a tactic from Pike to stop me from winning Game of Crows. But anyway,
come on. just on Eddie. I'm watching it, watching the game, and I'm thinking, Fiend's going to be really happy because Eddie's not, when there's a pack going up and he's looked at him and goes, yep, I'm getting front square. He was staying down a lot more, but I think it's the way the ball was coming in as well. And you could see a lot more clearer movement from the forward line, and he didn't feel he had to jump too. Yeah. And he only did the one kind of that big, what some people consider as an unrealistic attempt to bit in the way. But what was happening there is he had two Saints defenders, and he contested it so that there wasn't a clear possession from them. So the ball still came down. So for me, that was actually a good decision that he made at that time, because he was outnumbered, but trying to keep the ball in our forward line.
Yeah. Look, it's early in the season. Eddie'll be right. And he's obviously had a bit going on the last month, so you could excuse him. The two young midfielders, I thought, predictably were off the pace, Huey and Cameron Ellis-Yeoman. Cameron Ellis-Yeoman looked a bit heavy in the legs. I don't know how you guys saw that, but he looked a little bit slow. One-paced. And
he looked slow.
And Macca, did you notice that when the ball was on the deck in a tight situation, he was reaching in with his hands rather than getting his body in?
Yes, I did notice that.
Yeah, did that a few times. Huey doesn't do that and will probably be the one, hopefully, I think, to snaffle that last midfield spot when we're got a full deck of cards.
Yeah, he was almost non-existent in the first half.
They were really pressuring Greenwood. They were on him all the time, so he wasn't able to get that little breakaway. He was paddling more than being able to get a clean pickup. And I thought Cam, even though taking it all, what you guys said there, I thought he built into it better in the second half.
When they tired, Nick.
When the game opened up, yeah.
But he looked slow by comparison the first half. That's a very good point Phoenix made. He looked slow. And whether he was just tired from last week, I don't know. But
well, he doesn't run through packs. You know, I like the midfielders, Macca and Nicky, where, you know, they'll hit a pack, like when the ball's on the deck or in dispute or whatever, they'll actually...
Like Crouch style.
Like
Luke Shuey. Yep. Just watching the game today, Luke Shuey, as much as some people hate him for, you know, his... kind of gets the high tackles and everything else. But his ability to put the body over the ball and just run at it.
Exactly. Whereas Cameron will get to the pack and stop and reach in. And given his size, he really needs someone to get him to straight line through those situations. Anyway, we have to keep moving because we're always over an hour again.
Can we just quickly talk about Murphy and Tex?
Yep.
Because I actually really liked Murphy's defensive pressure that he was putting on. There was, I think, a series of play where, you know, he didn't quite get that tackle, but then they passed the ball out and he was up and at him and just trying to get in their face and caused a turnover a couple of stages because of that. So whilst we've lost that electric pace of Charlie, I think he's definitely come in and done his role, and I think probably exceeded expectations of everybody else.
Exceeded mine.
But the other thing I thought was that jump from and mark from Tex, and then the wheel on the left.
That wheel on the left was unreal.
Yeah.
That's him completely and utterly confident in his body again.
Yeah. He's yet to tear a game apart, and whether he's got that in him anymore, I'm not sure. But he's certainly the most relaxed and the most free looking that I've seen him for quite some while. And you know, his post game interview, he looked very calm and very relaxed, and you know, very clear headed. I liked his game, even though I didn't get a huge amount of it. And you're right, Nicky, that little glimpse of what he can do, and just the confidence of him to be able to do it.
Yeah, but even with those 10 possessions and his three goals, his influence on his teammates around him as the captain.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, Geary in the back pocket there, Jesus, I didn't even know he was captain. and we've got to mention Tommy Lynch. Tommy Lynch, I thought Tommy Lynch, he just showed how much we've missed him.
He also proved he's still the master at delivering to the forward 50, even when he's in the opposition forward 50.
A bit of a mixed bag from Tommy, but not unexpected, given he's had an interrupted preparation. There's a fair bit of scuttlebutt on Big Footy. For those from Big Footy listening tonight, pull your heads in. You know, the guy's come back after after a virus and injury and so God knows what else.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a very handy game and just showed
he how turned much it over he, a bit.
He did, but he also did some good passes
as
well.
Yeah. It's very easy to see, Macker, isn't it? How better we look when Tommy Lynch is leading up the ground.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He makes a huge difference.
Yep.
But on the contrast, one guy reverted back to his normal style on the weekend, and that was old Joshy Jenkins. I didn't particularly like his game.
Oh, he played.
He took contested marks, excuse me.
Took six marks.
It's the way the ball was coming in. It kind of didn't help him too much.
He only got credited with two contested marks.
Yeah, I
reckon there was another one in there, and they were nice ones. There was some great pass to him.
Not as bad as when I really bang him, but
when he's a deep forward backer and the delivery that was coming in was not good, what can he do?
Isn't that when he comes into his own because he's a bloody small guy in a big guy's body?
Yeah, I reckon. A couple of times
we weren't getting it into him at all there. It was getting turned over before it did.
It's just that little lack of desperation. There was a couple of times I said he could have got involved and he just watched.
I agree with that, Macca. We keep saying it. It's his ability to stay in the contest. He just loses interest in the contest too quickly, in my opinion.
That's just the one criticism I had of his game.
Yeah. Now, have we had any word about Rory Sloane? Because obviously it was his foot that was bothering him, and you would imagine a bit of precaution given the Eddie had surface. Have we had anything from the club on Rory?
No, nothing.
I haven't heard anything either. No. But it was noticeable, wasn't he, that he spent a fair bit of time off the ground in the second half. He only ended up playing 64% time on ground, so, a fair bit off the ground.
Third quarter, he was off for 20 minutes?
No, last I think it was. I think once we were really in control of the game.
I think it was the third quarter, Nick.
Was it the third? Yeah. I thought it was him and Malira.
Yeah, that was the third. That was the third quarter.
Yeah, I remember them sitting there and I thought, aren't they ever going to come on?
That was the third quarter. Miller ended up playing 80%, so he obviously had a big last quarter, but I don't think Sloaney came on much in the last quarter either.
He had no ice on his... don't think there was ice. I was watching the vision, trying to remember if there was any, because we were walking around behind the cameras. And I noticed some ice on shoulders and knees and things like this. There might have been one on his... actually, I think there might have been one on his knee. But there were a couple of other players, like McKay had it there as well.
Yeah, it's precautionary. He's had that little knee niggle for a season now.
But they didn't have anything on his foot. So I think it's the hard surface. He did have that bit of that injury. We're in control of the game. Why get him banged up? And they were banging him.
Yeah.
They were being quite physical. So sit him on the bench. We didn't need him.
Yeah, don't disagree. All right, let's wrap this up. Let's get into our awards. And first of all, it's Jet of the Week. Macca, surely you're going to nominate Sauce Jacobs.
Bryce Gibbs.
Bryce Gibbs. Now, Twitter, because we put these out to Twitter, was a close deal between Gibbs and Seed. 55 votes is a pretty good good sample. 47% to Gibbs, 40 to Seedsman.
For me, it was Gibbs over the four quarters that did it.
And Seed's definitely a close second.
Yeah. Either or could have snaffled that one. Let's have a look. No one else really contending. I mean, Leedy had the touches, but
they were two very, very important players. Those two.
Let's look at the Breakout Award. Again, Twitter telling us that, I mean, there's really only two candidates this week because Greenwood stunk it up a bit. Duday and Murphy, although, you know, we did have a couple of other CY and Greenwood in the mix for less than 20 game players. Twitter resoundingly giving it to Duday.
They got it right.
Yeah. There's no contest this week whatsoever. And our Stinking It Up Award, our Wake Up Award, Maka. I know you like this one the best because you like to get stuck into players.
No, I'm not as bad as you.
Come on, mate. Hang on a minute. Oh, I've made the intro to this one too long. I've got to cut this one off. Come on. You like that one, Nikki?
I do indeed. Bit of living end.
Bit of living end, yes. So we out on Twitter again. We had Ellis Yeoman, Greenwood, and Wayne Miller, who we haven't really talked about tonight, as the three nominees. A few others were chucked in there. I didn't put Sauce Jacobs in there.
Seriously, sorry, rat.
Well, he had 22 touches.
Yeah, but he still stunk it up.
Who Nicky?
I think it's worse if you actually get the ball and you stink it up, and your opponent's actually scores on you.
Yeah. I would have said Ellis Yeoman.
Yeah, I might join you on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying about Atkins, Nikki. I really do.
You hear what I'm saying? Well, I'm sticking with him. But, yeah, democracy, so.
Yeah, I mean, a few people, 26% went for Wayne Miller. I thought Miller was quiet, but I gave...
He had some good moments.
I felt like I gave him some allowance because I wouldn't mind betting he's got a sore spot if he spent that long on the bench in the third quarter. So we'll give him a pass on that one. And that just about does us for tonight. 1 hour 17 again. Bloody hell.
Except for my cock wobble, but that's very quick.
All right, I haven't even got the bloody song loaded for that, have I?
Well, it's easy. The goal review system.
Oh, look. What the hell is going on with that?
The AFL, who refuses to spend the money to actually put it in both camera posts, to put it at the correct angle, not so fucking high up, or actually put in more than one camera. Hey, there we go.
I agree with you, Nick. I really do.
And then not actually stipulating that, okay, we're going to do this and you have to put in those cameras. Do not put in high-definition cameras. They're making the channels who they've given the AFL rights to, who paid their money, they're then making them pay even more money to put in this bloody review system that just doesn't work. And you've had crowds booing because it takes so long because they don't have clear vision, particularly when they're trying to get a touched decision.
Well, there was one decision in the Hawthorn-Richmond game, which was an absolute joke that the goal umpire called it touched, and it was very obvious that the forward player, had got nowhere near the ball and had come off, I think it was Gunston's boot or something like that, in defence. And the score review went up as a goal when the opposition kicked it through. And even the field umpire felt very unhappy about this and asked the reviewer to have a review. So he had another look and then changed his mind.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, we have blokes riding on mountain bikes going down trails with GoPros on their helmets, giving us full high-def vision as they're riding. Why can't they stick GoPros on the bloody goalposts and be done with it? The technology isn't all that expensive. I just don't understand it. I can't understand it. And this whole going up to the scoreboard for the review is ridiculous. Geez. Just relay it back to the umpire. Yes, you got it right. No, you didn't get it right. Let the umpire, who is there and getting paid, actually signal the score. This whole going up to the scoreboard crap is some bloody marketing guy's idea and he needs to get stabbed in the eye.
Just to make it even a greater fiasco, that one I'm talking about, the centre umpire started running towards the centre of the ground end to rebounce the ball and then realised the goal umpire hadn't even bothered to wave the flag. So he had to run back and tell him to wave the flag.
And, well, goal umpire can't wave the flags until the field umpire actually gives him the all clear.
Gives him the all clear, exactly right.
Yeah, they can't do it. Yeah. It's not the goal umpire's fault. That's that field umpire's fault for stuffing up.
It was a real fiasco.
Anyway, and I'm winding us up.
And then just quickly, the one that really got my goat up was the one in the West Coast game where the field umpire was 100% certain it was touched. The player said it was touched. The goal umpire was going, okay, yep, that's what the field umpire, this is how it works. One of the other field umpire goes, oh, no, we should probably review that.
Nikki, you're killing me. I had to redo my exit.
Sorry. Not all.
All right, thanks, guys, for joining us on the chat. Thanks, Macca and Nikki. It was a good discussion tonight. Don't forget, you can hit us up on Facebook and Twitter, or AFL Crowcast, and we'll see you on Tuesday night, 8:30 Central for Tuesday Night Live. Good night.
Night.
Good night, all.